some unique perspectives. So let me do some introductions to you. You met Tom Schrader before. Tom is a pastor over at Redemption Church. Lee and Ann Wiggins. Lee was the pastor up in Prescott at Heights Church and is now down in the Valley. And we're glad to have them with us as well. Dina and Randy Deal. Randy is an executive pastor at Rock Point Church. And there's a few of you here, evidently. They're the rowdy crowd. And we're glad to have you guys here. Justin and Emily Anderson on the end. Justin and Emily have been on staff at both Praxis and then Redemption, but now God has called them to plant a church in the San Francisco area. And thanks, by the way, for making the time for us. He's kind of on sabbatical, but thought you guys were important enough to have the conversation with us. So thanks. Thanks, everyone, for being here. Here's how we're going to do this. I'm just going to ask you some questions. Some of them are just specific to you, and I know some things about your position in ministry and things like that. You all have microphones. You can interrupt anytime you want to interject and things like that. But we'll start with some general things and some general issues with ministry, and then we'll go on to some specifics about different things. Let me just start with something very, very positive. So what are some of the best practices that you have in your family, in your marriage, to keep the relationship fresh and strong? And some of the things you heard Tom say and Al say earlier, what are some things you do that just keep you at least solid in your relationship with each other and in your marriage and family? So go ahead and talk about that. Anybody want to go?
He doesn't know what I'm going to say. I think I've scared him. Every day we go for about an hour long walk, and we walk briskly to get exercise, but that's our little together time, and we just debrief on what's going on and laugh and I don't know, just discuss stuff. So it's a good way to kind of kill two birds with one stone.
Somebody else.
I would say we spend a lot of time laughing. Humor is a big part of us and our family, and of course our Friday date nights. In fact, she was just telling me during the other session when Al mentioned the five love languages. She said, "Oh, I just found this app online, and it says five love languages for your wife and for your husband, and that's what we're going to do this Friday." And so,
there you go.
Looking forward to it.
Date night, Friday night. So you have a regular date night.
Yeah.
And how long have you been doing that?
Years, not consistent all the time, but now that we're empty nesters, yes. It is
the party
way more
is
consistent.
Back. That's great. Justin, do you have a thought on that, Emily?
Yeah, one of the things, we have a six-month-old son and a three-and-a-half-year-old daughter, and so one of the things that we do pretty regularly now is wake up around 3 o'clock in the morning and just get some time together in my son's room while he's screaming and doing his thing, but we just get to connect. So that's been really good. That's been a really good thing.
Perfect.
We actually, I don't really do anything at night. We've cleared almost our entire nights. Almost every night we hang out and we read or watch shows. We make up new emails to get the free Hulu Plus trial so we can watch shows and stuff. So we do that a lot.
Yeah, like I'm supposed to go from that, but... You know, what are some of the things that you're, and this is going to be a little more vulnerable for some of you, some of the tensions that you're having right now, some things you're having to wrestle through as couples. In fact, let me just throw something up. You guys, Lee and Ann, you were in Prescott for how many years?
14 and a half years.
14 and a half years, and this past year, some things happened up there. I don't know what else to call it, but it was just a rough time. It was a coup. There was nothing else to call it, but it was something that it blindsided. You were blindsided in ministry, and so you took some precautions to protect family. You did some things to try to begin to move ahead. Can you just talk about what it's like to go through unexpected crisis in ministry, and how do you navigate that as a marriage, and how do you navigate that as a family?
Well, I think one of the things that was interesting when it first happened is all of a sudden, I mean, everything in our family, we're open, we talk about everything, but some of the stuff internally in ministry, we just don't talk about in front of the kids. A lot of the stuff that goes on a daily basis, stuff that I know and this kind of thing, I don't talk to the kids about. And all of a sudden, this thing comes up, and I had no choice but to immediately tell them and tell them everything. And so their whole world that looked one way turned a different way overnight.
How old are your kids?
At that time, they were 10 and 12.
10 and 12 years old.
Yeah. So that was an amazing moment for us, and one that, you know, we didn't even know how to handle going into it. But what we found is that as a family, at that moment, and I think because of their age, they were able to handle it, but we were in this together. And there's something about being able to share and share openly in that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, Justin, you and Emily have just decided to go up to San Francisco, and things are going great here. And I know there's no issues between, you know, on the Redemption staff. They're going really, really great here, at least from the outside looking in. But you're now...
Yeah. What does that mean?
Yeah. I heard you the first session. And you know, it looked great. It looked like things were going good, and yet God's calling you to a different place, and you have a baby, and you're having to make transitions. And so, I mean, this was a forced transition, but this was a planned one. So how are you dealing with those things in your marriage and family and things like that? What are you doing?
Yeah, the downside is we don't have anybody to blame, you know? It's kind of all our angst and tension is our fault. And so, or my fault, I guess, is what I hear a lot.
There's been a discussion, evidently. So
no, it's honestly been good. I mean, the hard part's over. We made the decision. That was the hard part. You know, and talking through what it means to move our family and leave friends and leave family and leave a church that we did love and still do love. That was the hard part, is making that decision and coming to grips with the impact of what that actually means, and then what trying hard to envision what life in a place like San Francisco looks like. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's been tough.
What I was going to say is that during this decision-making process, we have one thing that's been really encouraging for us is our communication has been probably the best it's ever been, that we've been able to really talk through every possible aspect of the decision back and forth, and it's got us into a place where we feel very comfortable and very open with our communication. So that's one huge blessing in making the decision.
Good. Randy and Dina, you a few years ago, your son was in a horrible car accident, and it rocked your world as a couple, and it rocked the church's world as well. And can you guys take a few moments and just tell the scenario what happened with your son and the adjustments you've had to make since then? You just tell a little story to get them familiar with it, and then... What are the challenges as far as a couple?
Dean is whispering, do the short version.
I know him.
Well, actually, in the fall of 2007, our middle son was going through a crisis, had attempted suicide a few times. We found ourselves getting called to emergency rooms and things like that. And that was the first rocked our world. In fact, sent us into, it rocked our marriage quite a bit. Sent us, you know, I had to make a phone call to Bill, my lead pastor, and say, I need to take a sabbatical. So we did that and got some serious counseling. My counselor's in the room. And
Go Roger.
And really, we had to get some tools in place because we didn't know how to communicate anymore. We didn't know how to handle it. We were parenting in completely opposite ways, even though he was already out of the home and things like that and an adult. And so right after that, a few months later, our youngest son, Randy Jr., was almost killed. In fact, one of his friends was killed in a horrific accident. And that was, if we had not taken the sabbatical and the counseling and done all those things, I think that really would have did us in. And so, and that sent us on a whole nother 2-year journey of taking our then 16-year-old, 6'2", 220-pound football player son was practically an infant again. And he had to work his way back to normalcy, which he did. And so... I mean, it affected the whole church. So,
how did you, as a couple, I mean, during that time, what were the conversations like? What are the things that you wrestled with? What are the I mean, you were thinking about, you took sabbatical because you weren't sure, okay, I can't handle the load right now, so I'm, but what were the things you were wrestling with, and what are the conversations like between the two of you?
We have always parented different, so it was really hard. We were like Roger would tell us, you're at one extreme and, you know, he's at the other extreme. You guys need to meet each other in the middle. And it was, I think, both of us just submitting and not pointing fingers at the other person and just looking at ourselves and deciding that we were going to meet each other. Mm-hmm. And we both had to give. We both had to change. But it did take... It did take outside help for us to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, we, a lot of times when you're in ministry, you don't want to tell people or let anyone know or be vulnerable or let your pride down that you need help, that you're not going to make it unless you do. And there was a point we thought, is our marriage even going to survive? Mm-hmm. And, but because we had support from our lead pastor, we had counselors, our home group, we had such a great support around us that, and so I think that's what I told him I was going to say, just never, ever, ever give up, like Churchill said. Yeah. Never, ever, ever give up, because there is hope.
Yeah.
Even in the most, you know, extreme or terrible time where you think there isn't hope, but God is just telling you, hold on, I got this still.
So it seems like there was a time where you guys decided to say, okay, we're not enemies on this. We're teammates. This is a team game, this parenting thing, and we're going to have to come to the same thing. So you made those adjustments as a couple. Tom, I want to ask you, I know you haven't talked too much about it publicly, but your wife Susan, you found out about 7 years ago that she had cancer. How did you prepare your daughters, and how did you prepare the church for the next season, where I would imagine that you weren't going to be as available as before? How did you go through that? All of us are going to experience things in ministry we don't expect, and we're all going to have to communicate, because people follow us, and people, when we don't communicate well, they assume. And so how did you...
I probably didn't do it very well. I don't know. There's people here from the church, so the answer will be embarrassing probably to try to go through. But, you know, when Susan was diagnosed, then it was a really harsh diagnosis, in the sense that it was a cancer, but they also said it wasn't curable, but it was treatable. And then different doctors are really leery, but we had one doctor that said, you know, we think 6 months, maybe a year. So we had 7 years in that process. And what I tried to do, because I'm pretty much a private person about most of my stuff. I'm not looking, you know, I said the other day, you know, I'm lonely right now, but I don't feel like people are the answer. So I'm not looking like for people to come by, and so it's hard. And Susan and I talk about it, and she's very private. So we talked about what do people need to know? How do you do that? What's the obligation you have? You know, and so we kind of struck a little rhythm that said, we'll tell you where we are, and then we'll tell you as things change significantly one way or the other. So in terms of just dealing with that with the congregation, that's how we dealt with it, and probably not well, but I was comfortable with it. Susan and I were pretty comfortable with it. In terms of staff, because there was a second part of that, in terms of staffing and availability and just kind of working through. Everybody's really good to me. So nobody, I mean, there's just everybody's really kind. And so they understood what was going on. And then I would just talk to them about it and tell them I'm going to be here for this. It put me in an interesting position, because I found myself wanting to be the pastor of crap that matters. I discovered that's not a very big pile. And so I would not to diss the stuff that I'm not doing.
They're all tweeting that right now. I just want you to know.
Yeah, I know. That's the stupid part of my life. But I found myself going, you know, I need to figure in or out. And so we kind of handled it that way. With the girls, it's interesting. When the girls were small, this is way more than you want. When the girls were small, I used to take them every other Saturday. I would take them every Saturday. But every other Saturday, I would take them to the hospital. And we would go up. You can't do this anymore. We'd go up and look at the babies. And then we'd go have breakfast or lunch or cookies or whatever it was. And I tried to teach them that because, number one, I wanted them to learn that that you could minister in a hospital. And number two, I thought professionally the future would be in healthcare. So Sarah, my daughter who's not here, was graduated. She's in nuclear medicine. And then Haley is a nurse. So what we did, and everybody hits their own rhythm with this, what we did with the doctor is we all went in the first meeting. And he started with his stuff, and then they started asking questions, and that was a really good rhythm. And then the girls knew every meeting we went to, but anytime there was a meeting with the results or anything that had tests or anything that was significant, the girls were always there. So that kept them in the loop. Susan was, you know, those three are pretty tight as a trio. And so they would talk, and we would talk really openly. As Susan got sicker, felt probably the last 3 years have been really tough, last 2 years really tough, and then the last year was brutal. What she would do, she was really obsessed with not letting the girls, and then the grandkids. So like when Haley went up to pick up, you know, the kids out there, not let them have their last memory be of mom being sick. Which was very difficult to do because, especially in the last year, that she just really was sick. So by just a little bit of communication in our rhythm and understanding what each one needed, I would send a text to both of them, and I would say, "Mom's having a rough day." And Susan and I would laugh. And within 2 minutes, I'd get a text back. And Haley would say, "That's so tough. I know it's tough on Mom. I know it's tough on you. I'll be praying for you." Sarah would text back, "Well, what are you doing about it? Have you gotten any medicine? Have you taken over here?" Every time. It was the same thing every time. So we would laugh. And so then you'd know each one needed a little bit of a different way. So that's how we tried to deal with it. You know, and then with each other, we just tried to be really honest about it. So we talk like really early on. It's all the conversations. I remember really early on, Susan was saying, "You know, this is going to be really hard." And I said, "Yeah, I know it." And she said, "I'm not going to make this." And I said, "Yeah, I know at that point I'm supposed to know it'll be fine." I said, "Yeah, it sounds like it." She said, "I don't know. You know, this is going to be hard on you because I'm the end. You do not want my name written as caregiver next to you." I always tell, I petition the governor to make medical marijuana legal for primary caregivers. I thought that would be a brilliant bill. I just thought that just seemed to me to be obvious. So Susan said, "These are the discussions you all have had, you just haven't had them in that context." She said, "Do you think you're going to be able to live alone?" And I said, yeah, I think so. And she said, "I don't think so." I said, "Okay." And you start having those conversations about life. In fact, at one point she said, I think she'd be really good for you." And I said, "Really? She's a little old." And that started all those conversations about just dealing with it openly and honestly. And then as it got hard at the end, you're just hanging on. I mean, I'm just trying to make every day the best I could. And I'm so far out of my game. You know, I'd never taken the garbage out. I'd never done laundry. I didn't even know how the laundry, I just knew it was dirty and came back clean. I didn't even know how that happened. And so I'd never done any of that. And then I ended up doing all of it, basically.
And when you lose the remote.
The remote was going to know what to blame. I didn't know what else to blame. Went to the grocery store. My first trip to the grocery store was amazing. I was gone like 3 hours. And I came home. I said, "Susan, this thing is amazing. I don't know if you ever noticed, but like there's rows of cereal." It was a whole new world for both of us. And we just tried to be honest. And that's all you had. And then here's the big thing I found, is let everybody deal with it differently. Because there's no, you can't Google, how do you respond to this? You know, it's their own rhythm, I think. So we handled it probably differently than other people would. But we handled it what I think was really good for us.
You're all in places of high leadership in a church. whereas most of the people here today are not in those higher levels of leadership. So you have a little more flexibility in how you do things. And what advice would you give to those who are, you know, have bosses who have bosses and things like that when they go through family crisis? And how do you, what's your best advice to families who are dealing with marriage issues, dealing with financial issues, health issues, kid issues? What are you, how are they supposed to handle it? What should they expect from their leadership in the church? What should they hope for in response to their personal crisis?
Yeah, just a word of advice. Just be honest with what's going on. And don't expect your boss, your senior guy, to necessarily seek you out and know all that's going on in your life if you don't tell him. And I know that that's been frustrating at various moments when you find out 2 months later that someone on your staff was really struggling and no one ever told you, so you couldn't do anything about it. And so if you got a big deal going on in your life, just tell your boss. And if he shuts you down, then he's a jerk. And just maybe don't tell him that, but he shouldn't. He's a pastor, right? You know, at some level, they've got to have some compassion somewhere. And so, but don't not tell him for fear that he's going to react bad or whatever. You got to make those needs known.
There is often an assumption that you told someone on the staff, therefore the lead people know. And I know a number of times I've walked past people the following Sunday and had comments of, well, he didn't even say anything about it. Well, I didn't know about it. I had no idea. And especially not just the staff person, but like Al was talking about before, the staff person's spouse will get really upset and start, you know, placing my response in that moment on the church and on God. And you know, it's one of those things where you just can't assume they know. And if you really want to know, first of all, I would agree with Justin. They do care and they want to care. The challenge of this level of leadership is that we can't care for everyone, but the people we're most likely to care for are our staff and their families. We can't care for everyone, but we do feel responsible to make sure everyone's cared for. And we will be very proactive in those kind of things to make sure that you're cared for in those things. Lee, you got a thought?
One of the things that I've observed is just we care about people all day long. That's what we do. And so somehow when it's our thing, we just think, boy, that's not at the level of the other things that I'm dealing with. And so we sort of downplay it, we hide it, we don't bring it out. And I think, you know, tag on what the two of you are saying is to bring it out and to have that conversation.
Yeah, good. Good. You know, I want to ask Justin and Emily. Justin, you were single when you started Praxis, and you guys were dating and then got married. And and there's a lot of people in the room that are single, and they're in ministry. And so I'd love to hear from both of you perspective of being a pastor, single and dating, and then marrying someone who is in ministry and the challenges of expectation of the congregation and things like that when you came on the scene, as well as how did you guys handle all that?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, it was really dumb. There's no question about that. We were dating in San Diego before we moved here to plant, and got engaged a week before we moved here to plant because mostly her dad threatened me, and so that... I needed to do it. And so we got engaged. So the first year of our church plant was our year of engagement. And then the second year of our church plant was our first year of marriage. And
so you're engaged in planting a church at the same time.
Yeah. And no one told us that was dumb. And so I blame most of you for letting us do that. And it came with all the stuff you would assume, you know. You don't get to go home together at night, and so you don't, you know, all the great conversations and intimacy and all the stuff that we're talking about, we just didn't have the ability to do any of that. It was a very frustrating year in many ways, and you know, ministry, planting a church is slow in that first year, and without having someone there to do that with is, you know, makes it even more difficult. And just the added pressures of first year of marriage is hard enough as it is without also dealing with a struggling church plant and all that. So definitely wouldn't recommend it to anyone. But it wasn't just for clarification's sake, I wasn't exactly single and looking at the time. I was engaged.
Yeah, I would add to that just from, well, from my perspective, it was really overwhelming because we were both young, but I was really, really young. We got engaged when I turned 20, on my 20th birthday. So we moved out here, and I really did not feel like I wanted to be in any sort of leadership position, and it was really scary for me. And one way we handled that was I was just really honest and said, I'm not going to lead a group. I'm not going to start children's ministry or women's ministry because I was still in school, working, all that. And so Justin was really good, and he just said, you don't have to do anything, and your role in the church is support me. And so that was hard since we weren't married, and so the supporting him looked a little bit different. I couldn't really, he didn't come home to me at night and that kind of stuff. But he was really open to the idea of you don't have to take on any role, and there was no pressure in that area. So,
you know, Emily brought up a good point. I'd like Dina and Ann to kind of respond to it. You're married to these high-profile guys who are up on stage and in front of people. And how did you handle the pressure of your husband being, you know, in the spotlight, and as well, how did they handle the fact that you have ministries too? And you're strong leaders in many, many ways. And how do they support you? And what can husbands do to really support their wives? Or what can ministry people do to support their spouses when it comes to their personal ministry? Because you had your own identity, not just pastors' wives, but ministry leaders as well. Can you talk about that?
Well, we were a church plant, so you kind of filled in wherever you needed to at the time.
Sure.
And our children were like, they were the children's ministry. And so, but if you had to mop the floor, that was okay. He's always allowed me to pursue, where God has, you know, leading me at the time. I was involved with women's ministry. I was on the worship team, and I got fired from all of them, didn't I, Bill? And I really did.
We'll talk about Bill later.
Okay. But I never felt like, he was in the spotlight and I was secondary. I always felt encouraged by him to pursue wherever God was leading me personally.
Okay.
You know, I think there are seasons in everybody's lives. And for us, when we first came to Heights Church 14 and a half years ago, we were both in our 20s and we had no children. And it was a tiny church, and we literally worked around the clock, side by side, together, and loved every minute of it. And then two kids, and the season changed for me. I realized I have two little lives here for 18 years each that I've got to prepare to go out and multiply our efforts for the Lord. And so if I'm always at the church, they're going to grow up to be total imbeciles. So pulled back from the church, and that was really tough on our marriage. We look back on that, and probably we didn't even know how bad it was at the time, but I don't think we were prepared for that season in our lives, and had we prepared for it, probably would have gone better. And then as the children have gotten older, of course, you know, back easing into ministry and bringing them alongside us and letting them serve with us or in another area, but at the same time as us. They're both here today. I homeschool them, so we've been doing school all morning, and my daughter's been helping with the kids. So, you know, we try to keep the family unit whatever season we're in, try to keep it strong, and just allow for those different times.
What is the hardest part, and you guys don't answer, what is the hardest part about raising kids in ministry, and then what's the best part? Can you just talk about those things? What's the hardest part for you? What's the best part?
I think for us, our kids, like, we're empty nesters now. Our last is in college. I think the hardest part was them feeling secondary, that if there was a problem in the church, the kids had to wait. There were times where they would say, oh, if I want to talk to Dad, I better make an appointment and say I'm someone from the church. Or, you know, to really be aware of that. But that's something we learned later. But that was probably one of the things that the kids would feel secondary. But the other blessing is them being a part of the ministry and how they have their own walk with the Lord now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good. Yeah. Somebody else? Emily?
I think that the hardest part, so our kids are really young, so we haven't had too long to experience this, but the hardest part so far, I would say, is that people think they know our kids because they know things about our kids. And so I'll have people come up and talk to Lily, our 3.5-year-old, and she doesn't know who they are. And they're telling her stuff that they heard about her doing at home. And just trying to protect the kids is hard because we also want to be open about our family life and open about how we're raising our children, so that we can be examples, but also being protective is a hard, finding the line there is really hard. And as far as a blessing, I think it's a good challenge because we've talked a lot about it. People are gonna be watching our kids, and so we have to really step up in our parenting and look for every opportunity to make sure that we're doing everything we can to raise them to know Christ.
Good.
I think for us, if I can speak, it's a calling to be a ministry family. It's a calling for the pastor. It's a calling for his wife, whether she goes willingly and wanting to, or more like Moses going, no, I don't want to, and still called to, you know, go to Egypt or whatever it is that you're being asked to do. It's a calling for your children to be pastor's kids. Obviously, God, they were born to you. God did that. So that's the hard part. And it's also the blessing, because to whom much is given, much is required. And I think if you keep that at the forefront and emphasize the blessing of the call and how amazing is this that God chose our family to minister in this way, we are so blessed and God expects more out of us. And so that's a good thing. And how can we live up to what he has for us? So it can kind of be two sides of the same coin, I suppose.
Lee, you and Ann, you guys homeschool your kids. And can you talk about the challenges of being a homeschool and in ministry? And, you know, I've met your kids. They are wonderful and they're extremely well-balanced kids and they just really interact with adults well. You've done a great job with them. How do you've got kids who are, they're in a church environment and they're in a home environment. And so there's a whole world out there that you're having to expose them to, get them to adjust to, because one day they're going to leave the nest and they're going to go out. So what do you do to get them prepared when you're homeschooling and their environments really are home and church? What do you do to get them out there?
Just a couple things for me that has been fun for me. We only homeschooled because we went to a Saturday night service. When we went to a Saturday night service, I found that the 2 days they were off from school, I wasn't there. And it was driving me crazy, and I couldn't figure out how to solve the problem. And I thought that Saturday night service was just like, well, the sermon's done earlier in the week, so why is that going to be hard? So I figured I would just show up there at 6 o'clock, and by 7:30, I'd be home. And nothing of the sort was the case. I mean, it was something that was on my heart all day, and I never left until hours after the service. So Saturday was a wash. So that's why we went to homeschooling, and it's just worked out amazing for us. But one of the things that I found as being a pastor is so much fun is we're able to expose our kids to just some of the most awesome people in our lives. So we're constantly in the homes of people in our church that have so many different interests and likes and backgrounds and different things. So they're always doing it. And I try to take them along with me as often as I can. If I'm speaking somewhere or going somewhere, they're going along. And so very often they will talk about different conferences we've been to and different places we've been at. And so for me, I think one of the best things, my son always, he was what they call him, a junior janitor on Sunday mornings. And so he was all over the church all day Sunday morning. So he would leave with me and go into the church at 6 o'clock on Sunday mornings. And for me, the time driving to the church and driving home with him on those days, I really didn't see him in between the times, but it was just some of the best times for us. So I don't know, for me, you know, you asked a moment ago, what are some of the best parts of having kids in ministry? I've loved just having them by my side. And the older they get, my daughter and I have been having these great, great conversations recently about doctrinal things. And, you know, I'll share with her and explain to her what TULIP is or something like that. And then she'll go read all the verses on it and come back. But Dad, what about this verse? And it's just, I don't know, I just find that just a ton of fun.
That's great. That's great. Anything else about what are the biggest surprises of being married in ministry, and what are the biggest benefits? You mentioned one of them, but what are the biggest surprises? You're married, you're in ministry. What is the thing that you didn't expect that you're having to adjust in your family, your marriage, those kind of things? What were you surprised about?
She said I had to share it, but I thought it was pretty enlightening for me. We were talking the other day about what might come up here, and you guys got to know, none of this was planned, scripted. None of us knew what Scott was going to ask us, so this is really totally just Holy Spirit-led. But what Dean and I were talking about, I was surprised by her answer, and she said, you know, as being a pastor's wife, she says, one of the things I didn't expect, was hard to respond to, is that people would make comments to her about Rock Point, about me, about things we were doing or certain vision we had or whatever. And yeah, often, and especially it was about me, and it was negative or derogatory or things like that, that she felt like, hey, you know, you have your opinion about the church or about him as your pastor, but he's still my husband. And how do you feel like you can just say that to me? Mm-hmm. Off the cuff, in the lobby, at church, or whatever, things like that. So, I mean, you know, just to encourage you spouses,
One thing I did have to come to terms with is just to pray when to respond. Like if you start to respond back, and that is your husband, and you want to respond back in the same way that they like kind of attacked to just to really learn and pray to say, when do I respond? When do I just smile? And, you know, mm-hmm. Why don't even waste your breath responding, you know, just to really pray when is the right time to respond. But that is something that did amaze me, that like I wouldn't even think in any other profession where I could feel free to go up to someone's spouse and say, well, you know, your husband, or, you know, so that was one of the things that surprised me.
Yeah. Emily, did you have something?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest surprises for me when we first... I mentioned this already. When we first got married, we set the bar really low. I had zero expectations at the church. And I would say, because we set the bar really low, I'm very surprised that there wasn't more expected of me. That over the years, I've always thought people are going to look to me. I mean, we still don't have a women's ministry, and no one's ever come up and told me, why don't we have a women's ministry? You should be doing that. Because I don't feel called to do that. And it surprised me how much control we have over setting the expectations of the church, and that probably all of the guilt or I guess expectation has been self-driven, and I personally have not had any pressure from anyone in our church to be a certain person. And I really think that just because of our circumstances when we started, we set the bar really low, and it really was very helpful. And that's been a huge surprise to me.
Yeah. Hey, Tom, you had a business background, mm-hmm. and you came into ministry. And there's a perspective that one is harder than the other, that business is harder or ministry is harder, or, you know, but what, having both backgrounds, what would you say to the people here who say, boy, my job's really hard, and people in the workplace don't understand? Or
yeah. Well, first of all, they're not harder, they're just different. But most of the people who are in the workplace who are evaluating you do not think you're working very hard. So they look at me and go, geez, so you work Sunday and Monday's off and Tuesday you get your nails done. And so most of, I'm just telling you, most of your people don't assume you're working very hard, typically. And so there's some similarities. Again, like with the children, I have a lot of friends who are in business who kids feel like they come in second place, like in ministry. They would go, well, my dad cares more about my deal, more about whatever it is. So there's some similarities. For me personally on the process, I don't know that one's harder than the other. They're just different. But what for me is kind of a hot button is the delineation that both sides make between the secular and the sacred. And I've thought about this a lot because the guys that are around our place and young guys that I've spent time with and business guys, I've said to them over and over and over again, there's no difference, da, 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 da. And yet we'll get in groups and they feel that. So I think part of it is, this is my, I don't know what's right. I think part of the business guys don't want to accept that business is ministry because they don't want the burden that comes with it. They don't want the responsibility that comes with that level of assessment of its ministry. So I like both of them. I personally feel that for most of the people in the church, especially high-powered business guys, ministry is really going to take place in the marketplace probably. I mean, there's only so many jobs to have in the church, good jobs, advising consent, elder, whatever it might be. And so for me coming out of there, I think there's a little bit of a, it's amazing how much mileage you get. So I haven't done a deal in, I don't know, whatever that is, 30 years maybe not quite that long. And I still have the reputation of he's a business guy, he knows how I feel. So I think there's an advantage that I have. I have a disadvantage in that I have no theological training. I have no training, so I'm kind of winging that part.
You should talk to Lee's daughter, she knows Tulip pretty
well.
I
tell you, I'd love to help her out with that. But the business part is a real asset in terms of just going, there is a kinship there. But I wouldn't be afraid of these guys in terms of business or in terms of church. And I would unleash them on their marketplace, give them a vision of things they could do. So there's a lot of similarities. Kind of the difference is there's a battle for a dollar, there's a battle for a soul, that kind of difference. But functionally, they're really the same. And there's probably a lack of respect and really underestimating the church guys of the business guys, the business guys of the church guys. That would be my general sense.
So the mutual respect of what they do is going to create a better ministry partnership with people inside and outside.
I think so, yeah.
Outside of ministry. Here's what we want you to do. I want you to take some time at your tables. I want you to have a conversation at your tables. Generate a question for this group. We're going to take about 5 minutes. Generate a question for them that you might want to ask. We've got all sorts of different backgrounds. We've got people who are church planting and got married, you know, in ministry. We've got a single again. We've got people homeschooling and they've been in tough ministry environments. We've got church planting, all sorts of stuff. Generate a question at your table and then we'll have a few of them answered in just a minute. Go ahead and turn around the tables.